From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here we are back again for episode 97 on the 17th of December 2015. It is The Dice Men Cometh with Mark.
And Garth.
And Leon is somewhere on his way to the studio. Look, we're hoping he's going to be here soon. And actually, this is probably a good opportunity, Garth.
Mm-hmm.
The listeners don't know a lot about Leon, do they?
No, they're lucky in that regard.
We know a bit about him, but I tell you what, even I got a shock the other night when we were playing games and I heard this.
I haven't had to do voices in such a long time, though.
I do them all the time. The problem is that you generally veto me from doing them.
Because they get too creepy.
Because they creep away. There's a few of them there that I'm not allowed to do.
One of them made me feel very dirty.
So you kept that one?
Yes.
No, in a bad way. Like, scrub yourself until you bleed.
Oh, okay.
It was my regular voice. This isn't my regular voice. I had to change it completely.
God, I hope that's not true. It's
not true.
So, that was, of course, or you wouldn't know, that was, that one's Leon's wife, Sarah, lovely wife, Sarah, that we got to play games with on the weekend, Garth.
Yes.
And, look, she's lovely to play games with. How she puts up with Leon, I don't know.
Well, we had a little bit of an insight into their marriage, didn't we?
Anyway, we'll come back in a few minutes. Oh, no, before we do.
Yeah, what are we doing
this
week?
What are we doing this week,
Garth?
That's
an excellent question, Mark. So we are going to talk about what we've been playing, as always. We're going to talk about one or two games, depending on the time. We are then going to go and break out our top fives for 2015. We'll get on that juggernaut. It's the time of year. And then surely it's about time we talked about our latest pandemic legacy.
Oh, yes. So, all that and a lot more coming up soon on The Dice Men Cometh.
That was Early Christmas Present by Kate Nash on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh. And you've all just got an early Christmas present yourself that I'm here now.
Hey.
And apparently nothing untoward happened while I was gone.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. But you should listen to the podcast when it's released.
I might just do that.
Or be here on time. One or the other.
Yeah. Well, somebody's got to make the nice little sweet things for all the children.
That's true.
That's what I do for a job, by the way.
Oh, right.
I was going to say Mark's not allowed within 500 metres of all of
Yes.
Anyway, Mark, do you want to ask me what we've been playing this week?
Garth?
Yep.
You've been playing some games lately, haven't you?
Well, not just me. We have all been playing some games this week, and quite rarely, all three of us have been sitting around the table for more than one game, which is great. And Leon, we were lucky enough to have your lovely wife join us as well, which
Indeed.
Was pleasant. Now, we're going to talk about arguably a game that has had some of the most popular criticism from critics. It's also had a huge boom in the last little while. We were lucky enough to pick up a copy as soon as it came through our friendly local game shop in Area 52. It's one of a game by one of our favourite designers. And Mark, you want to do the name for me as only you can?
It's Vlada Chvátl.
Exactly right. And we are talking Codenames, his latest game, which is also the number one party game, according to Board Game Geek, in the world ever, according to Board Game Geek.
Wow.
That's not bad, is it? Because it's only been out a few short months in Australia anyway. But we are talking Codenames, of course. It was only published this year. It was published by Czech Game Editions, of course, and it plays from 2 to 8. Now, I've played a few versions of the two-player game when I was just getting the hang of it. It's certainly safe to say that it gets better with more people along for this experience because the great thing is this game should be really easy to explain, but I've explained it now to about half a dozen different groups, and every single time I get a bit of a weird look going, this is fun.
Yeah.
But all you have to do is play that first time and you go, yeah, I get it. So how do you play this game? Good question, Leon. I'm glad you asked. Well, there are two rival spy masters and they each know the identities of the 25 secret agents. Now, the 25 secret agents are represented by five rows of five completely random cards. Now, these cards have a word on them. They have nothing to do with each other. So you could have 25 cards, and there'll be Hippopotamus and Egg Timer and Glasses and Mark and Paris. Something else. Absolutely nothing in there. In the game, you get about 400 potential cards, so that's not a bad little... Someone can do the maths, and there's a huge number of potential combinations.
Six.
Lots.
Exactly. So you've got two teams. You've got the two Spy Masters. Now, they're both going to sit on the one side of the table, and what they're going to have is a little card which has the 5x5 grid, matching the 5x5 grid on the table, and it's going to have a selection of red and blue squares. Now, Leon, you might be the red Spy Master, so your job is to give clues to your team
so
that they guess the red spies down on the table, and I might be the blue Spy Master, and my job is, not surprisingly, to get the blue spies chosen.
Death to the blue.
Exactly. There's also a selection of beige squares, which are just the innocent bystanders, which are no ones in particular. And then there is the one square of death, which is the assassin. Now, that's all good and well, but it becomes really interesting as soon as you say, well, the Spy Master's only allowed to say two things, and that is one word and one number, and your job is to get your team to guess as many of the spies in that one go as possible. Go. And that's it. That's all you have to do.
You know what I think is missing in this game, just before we get into a bit more detail?
Yeah.
Why didn't they give the Spy Masters names?
Okay.
Like Red Spy Master and Blue Spy Master.
Yeah.
Like one could have been like Napoleon Solo, and one could have been like Ilya Kuryakin or whatever his name is, from, you know, the, what are they called? The uncle. They could have had a funny theme to it.
Yep.
But that's the only complaint I'm going to make about this game, really.
And the pictures are all the same. That's the only complaint I'll make about
it. Yeah, but they are very Archer style in their artwork.
So that's
kind of cool. And the cards are double-sided, not just the cards with the words on them where, you know, you get the heaps and heaps of combinations, but as are the spy cards, because you have a whole lot of blue spy cards, which are double-sided, for you've got your male spy and your female spy. So it's all equal in code names, which is fantastic. This game plays in about 15 minutes, and I think one of the joys of this game is that how quickly people become invested in it.
Mm.
Because as a spy master, you are trying your hardest to get that one clue out that will make the job so much easier for your little spies who don't know anything to be able to guess their, you know, a couple of combinations just to give you the heads up, because this game only goes for such a short amount of time. It's tough though, because of course, there are so many words where the meaning or the clues that you give could apply to a whole bunch of different scenarios on their end. And obviously, you were doing everything you can to avoid that assassin word particularly.
Yeah. The thing you were saying before, Garth, about being involved in this, anyone that's listened to this show or knows me knows that I'll buy a game at the drop of a hat.
Yes.
I'm not even scared. But I watched a few videos of this, and as well as read all the positive reviews for it, and it didn't do anything for me at all. I was actually kind of, until people started talking about it that I knew personally, I was kind of like, oh, okay, fair enough. But as you said, as soon as we started playing it, about 30 seconds in, I went, right, I do get this. And I am in... The tension is just palpable straight away, which for something so small is just amazing.
Exactly right. And the fact that it is a party game, I love the fact that you can really easily go to any old sit-down table area and you could be playing a game of this within about 30 seconds and it can be done and dusted in 15 minutes, but I guarantee you it won't. Because you will not play one game of this.
No, well,
will go in and play this three or four times without stopping.
Well, the other night we started playing it at the start of the night, and we had some other new stuff and fun stuff to get to.
Yep.
But some part of the back of my mind just went, no, just keep going.
Just do it.
Just keep going. But that being said, the thing that I mentioned when we were playing it as well, I didn't want to do the same thing that I did with another game called Concept, which is if you play that enough with the same group of people, it might get a bit samey. But the beauty of this game, I was thinking about this later after I mentioned that to you guys, if everyone gets better at it, then it just becomes more of a challenge.
Exactly.
Whereas in Concept, it's a co-op game, so if everyone just gets better at it, you've just blazed through the game in 20 minutes and gone, oh, this is boring. Whereas this, the skill level will go up and the challenge will go up.
And you talked about 400 cards, you only pick 25 at a time, so a lot of replayability.
Yep.
In fact, you could set out 5.235 times 10 to the 64.
Wow.
Different sets of cards.
That would be permutations, is that right?
That.
Or combinations?
No, that's combinations.
Wow.
I think. That's what it says. Maths is fun on the calculator, but I don't believe it.
Yep.
But like, I guess the point I'm trying to make is unlimited replayability, basically.
Correct. Yeah.
And then add to that, you've got those little cards that lay out which cards are the blue ones,
yeah, the
which cards are the red ones. That's what they're called.
Mm.
You've got another, 20 of those, which change it every time. So even if you played with the same cards and the 20 different keys, there's 20 different ways you can play anyway. So yep. Multiply that number by 20. That's a lot of replayability. And I was exactly in the same camp as you, Leon. I had heard about this game and thought it's going to be good.
Mm.
I had read how it works, and I could not get my head around it. It sounded silly. It sounded boring. It didn't sound like any sort of spies that I knew.
No.
And made me, I don't know, think maybe it's not as good as I thought. 30 seconds of playing, I'd nailed down the concept. It was like, this is totally as awesome as everyone was saying.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the difference between this and Concept, we found Concept to be a puzzle rather than a game.
Yeah. Yes.
Whereas this, you get into it and it is a game. And I love the fact that already, and look, it's been a couple of months, but the fact that Check Games Edition has released a companion app for this where the app also gives you a random generator for the keys. So you don't even need the key cards. That will just add, again, more replayability. It has an inbuilt timer if you really want to go down that path. The rule book, which is only a couple of pages long, really just focuses on what a legitimate clue is and what a non-legitimate clue is that a clue giver can give.
And you need that bit of guidance because it, particularly when you're only talking about one word, it can be tricky sometimes, as we found out. Leon?
I don't remember me being bad.
No, well, I would say Mark's Indiana J-
Oh, yes.
is not really one word when you're trying to give a clue.
We can say, what was the one that was just beyond stupid on my part? Boy Wonder.
Yeah.
I was Boy Wonder was one word.
But look, I think it's pretty fair to say that this game, more than any other that I've played in a pretty decent amount of time, just wants you to play it again and again, because you leave every single game, which only goes for 15 minutes, going, I can do that better next time, and I'm going to be able to have a go. So let's do it. And then you play out, lay out your 5x5 grid, and you just go, holy hell, how am I going to make squirrel match with keyboard?
And we played it at probably least 3 or 4 times at the start of the night.
Yep.
Then we played 2 more games.
Mm.
Then we came back to it again, and I think we played like another 6 times at the end of the night.
Yep.
And we were swapping around who was with who. And it didn't matter that, you know, I teamed up with Leon's wife and I didn't know her and didn't know what she thought about. We just had fun exploring different combinations and some crazy, crazy clues, some which we can't repeat on radio, of course. But, yeah, look, I had so much fun with it. It was a game that came out in 2015, and obviously later, when we get to our top fives, I would be surprised if this game doesn't feature. Mm. That'll be coming up, in fact, next after this. But I'm a bit nervous.
Okay.
Leon's given me a music USB. I've queued up a track. I've got no idea what it is.
Do we need a language warning, Leon?
I would maybe. There's 90 songs on there, and I was very quick. So
there may be coarse language in this song. It may be good. It may not. Let's give it a run.
That was Flyleaf with I'm So Sick on Edge Radio 99.3 with the Dice Men Cometh. And lads, what a year we have had.
Oh, yeah.
Hang on, Leon, first. I just have to say, that wasn't that bad, actually.
Yeah.
I quite liked it. So, good pick.
Well, there's 89 more to give it a crack.
Excellent. So, yeah, a year. It has been a year.
It sure has been. It feels like almost a year since we were here talking about the same thing last year. So, hasn't time flown? Now, I think what we should probably do is just let's start with some honourable mentions, some games that, you know, we thought were pretty damn good, but maybe not just quite cracking the top five. So I get this party started with a game that I have played a couple of times and I've really, really enjoyed. I believe that the artwork in this game is fantastic. I really love the gameplay, though, which is obviously what this hobby is all about. It's also by an Australian designer, which is also great. So I'm going to start the ball rolling with Elysium. Now, that's going to be one of the games that I think was so close to my top five, but it just didn't quite crack it for me.
Well, we'll see what other people thought about it maybe in a
little
while.
That's fair enough. Yeah. Now, Space Cowboys, I think, did a great job. Matt Stump Dunstan did a really good job in designing this.
Let's talk about it a little bit more later.
Should we talk about it later? Yeah. Okay, so who wants to go?
May come back. Well, look, I want to make another special mention. So I didn't love this game, but I think it does deserve a special mention just because of its innovative use of a tablet device in a board game, and that is XCOM.
Okay.
So it's certainly not a game that I loved.
Yep.
It was fun, but I just think it's brought iPads into the world of board games in a way that I don't think any other game has done, really, where it's an integral part of the game. I mean, you could argue that you could play the game without it,
yep.
But I thought how they used it was really good, so I wanted to make a special mention of them.
Yeah, just before we get to you, Leon, I'd say that a second runner-up to that would almost be Alchemist, because although you can play it without the app, it's nowhere near as a required
part.
Yeah,
it's not as integral, absolutely right,
XCOM probably would have been on my top five. I thought it came out at the end of last year, so I didn't even think about it. But to be fair,
I
was looking through my collection and a lot of stuff came out near the end of last year, and I was just like, oh, even though I didn't probably get it to the table till this year.
Yep.
So, but either way, yes, XCOM, very, very good. One of my first mentions, an Aussie game, a small game that we've all played, Vault Wars.
Yeah. Well, it's not Aussie, but it's No. It's John Gilmore, who is from the US of A by Floodgate Games.
Are you thinking of Tavern Wars?
Tavern Fame.
Tavern Fame?
No, I could have sworn. Oh, I don't know.
There was an Aussie influence in that there was a prominent group
of podcasters?
Board game podcasters who were involved in the playtesting of this game.
Oh, that's right. It was you, punks. That's right.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, we might talk about that game a little bit more in a while.
Yeah.
Look, I want to make a special mention of Motonai.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I have this game.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't got it to the table.
Wow.
We've been playing so much Pandemic Legacy and other stuff. Now, I totally loved Glory to Rome.
Yep.
And this is the spiritual successor to Glory to Rome. I've sort of learned how to play it and then forgotten again because that's how long since it's been since
I
had it.
Well, good thing, Mark, Rado has just released three videos, I think, on how to play Motonai.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those ones. It took me a read-through, a play-through, a video. And I've played, as I said, Glory to Rome as well, which is quite similar, to actually get it down.
Yep.
And then, of course, I've forgotten it again because it's been long. So, look, I'm really looking forward to getting it to the table. I think it'll be a great game. Mm-hmm. And much shorter than Glory to Rome. So I wanted to give it a special mention. That's Motonai by Carl Chudik.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you've probably done Leon a favour by getting Motonai, because otherwise he would have to spend hundreds of dollars picking up a copy of Glory to Rome for us. Now, another one I wanted to make special mention about is Steamworks by TMG, which is worker placement, steampunk, creating your own devices, which just made a really different feel to a lot of the worker placement games that we've played over the last 12 months. So we were very kindly given a review copy by TMG on this, and I do want to say thanks again for that. But I think it just filled a really nice niche in the worker placement genre, because the fact that you get to create your own tableaus was a really interesting dynamic at the table, to see four different people creating four different machines that did a large number of different things. It had a lot of player interaction, which I thought was very, I guess it was just more in your face than a lot of the worker placement games that we've normally played. So I want to put a special mention out there really, really quickly.
Well, I've got one more special mention. Leon, have you got any special
mentions? I've got one more, and it probably would be on my top five, but I only played it once, so for that, I didn't put it on there.
Yep.
Mysterium. We played the other night and was absolutely spectacular. I know it kind of came out. Did it come out last year, I think, in a different
It came out originally in, was it Polish? That was originally the edition.
I think it was Essen last year, 2014 Essen was when it came out.
Exactly, but it is a 2015
It's only just recently
edition.
Come out
but,
to English.
But you lads played that version, and there's the new one, as you said, is much, much more improved in its component quality and the way that it plays. And I guarantee if I'd played that more than once, that would be probably my number five.
Yeah, well, I think after our experience with it the first time round, all of us were a bit ho-hum, I think, about it. Yeah. Look, we could see the idea of it, and obviously the fact that it had taken a very broad concept like Dixit and taken it to the next murder mystery level was great. But having played the new version now, with all the extra bits, which just makes it that little bit more, I don't know, thematic and meaty and just really enjoyable. And for me, having now played the ghost role, which I really, really enjoyed, I can definitely see why it's up there for you, Leon. Great game.
Cool. So one more special mention from me. This is an intriguing game to me. It was actually Rado's run through that made me go, oh, I think we don't want to play this.
Yeah.
Thunderbirds.
Oh, yes,
I think it's like the great implementation of the theme, really interesting mechanics, bit more of the story narrative type game. I don't know anyone that owns it. Leon, you got any spare cash lately? Because I believe it is a bit expensive. It's got all the little ship figures and everything. It looks great. I'd really like to try it. So special mention to Thunderbirds.
Yep. And I've only got one more, which is, I'm putting it on here purely because I waited 18 months for it.
Yes.
And we haven't mentioned any deck builders. So I'm going to mention Arctic Scavengers, the new edition by Rio Grande Games, just because when we reviewed it, we'd feel like we'd reviewed half the game. I've had a chance to play it a little bit more, and it just gets better and better with the more stuff that you put in there. So reliving a cold ice age, everyone is struggling for survival kind of deck builder, I think it just adds a lot of feeling and theme to a genre that is pretty saturated at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Look, a couple more, not special mentions, but look, I want to give a dart of the year. I've talked about this game a little bit. There was so much hype around it from the previous Essen, the 2014 Essen, because it was released in another language.
Mm-hmm.
I waited a long time for this Kickstarter, got some of the extra chrome. You know, this was going to be, you know, the Splendor killer and all this sort of stuff.
Yep.
You may remember I've talked about Viceroy.
Mm.
And now it's sitting on my shelf, and look, if it was breathing, it'd be an oxygen thief. I don't know that I would ever pull it out again. I don't know, it just didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
And it got such hype.
I know, that's the thing.
Tom Vassell raved about it. As I said, it was a hit of Essen.
Yep. Oh, look, I think there is a game there, but it's not doing anything that's dramatically different or new that doesn't make it jump off the shelf any better than a lot of other games. It is a real shame. The game looks great. I think creating a little individual pyramid on the table, it feels like you're creating and you're building something, but I don't know, it's just not quite right. I think you've got to almost choose a strategy at the very beginning of the game and just not deviate at all to have any kind of chance to, you know, go along the collection of scrolls or creating the little circles and things. It's just not there, is it?
And look, maybe if I was totally in love with the Russian CCG Berserk that it's based on and the characters meant something to me, maybe that would make a difference. I don't know. So I'm calling it the dart of the year. And it, as I said, the Russian and Polish versions came out in 2014.
Yep.
The English version and my Kickstarter version came out in 2015. One more thing I want to touch on before we get to the final countdown, which we'll just have to wait for a moment. I want to give a Jump the Shark Award.
Oh, okay.
It's a joint award. I'm going to give it to three games.
Wow.
Love Letter, Batman.
Okay, yes.
Love Letter, The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies. And Love Letter, Star Wars.
Okay.
Now, I know there are other versions of Love Letter that came out in 2014. Look, Love Letter is a great game. Don't get me wrong. I do love it. But really? Do we need all these licensed versions?
Yeah, well, it's a real shame because it's basically a bastardization of a fantastic game that really just started the micro game trend and just sent it off into the stratosphere. What is wrong with the original, you're just vying for a princess's love?
And look, I can get that they want nerds to walk into game stores and go, oh, I like Batman, there's a Batman game, I'm going to buy it.
Yep.
Oh, there's a great game in here.
Mm.
I get that. I get that's how you sell games. I just feel a bit, as Leon's wife would say, dirty, but not in a good way.
pardon? What? Did I legitimately miss something?
No, we'll talk to you about it later.
Okay.
Um, Yeah, I just feel like it is a bastardization of what is an amazing game. And really, I mean, that game opened up a whole subgenre of games, the mini games or even micro games.
Yeah.
So I'm feeling dirty about it. Now, look, we've come to the point where we're actually going to have to do some counting down.
Okay.
But before we do, let's take a quick musical break.
Oh, yeah. Spider Bait with Buy Me a Pony. You are with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, Mark, are you brave enough to start this?
This what, Garth?
This countdown. This Sorry, final countdown. I'm not going to sing it. Wow, that was smooth.
We'll leave it in the background there.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll bring it up when they get to some words.
Exactly right.
So, my top five games for 2015. Now, I'm always a bit sensitive about this because a lot of the time we're playing catch-up.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the good games from 2014 we're still only getting to in 2015. But there are a few this year. My number five.
Yep.
It did get a brief mention by Leon. Not being an Australian game. And that is Vault Wars by Jonathan Gilmore and Ben Harkins from Floodgate Games.
Yep.
Now, Jonathan Gilmore, obviously one of the designers of Dead of Winter.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky enough, as we said, to be playtesters for this game.
Yeah. So, John, he's been a wonderful asset because he's very happy to answer questions. He's incredibly large contributor, I guess, on Board Game Geek and on Reddit. And obviously, you know, he had arguably the game of the year for a lot of people in 2014 with Dead of Winter. So to be able to back it up with a very different game in Vault Wars just shows that this guy, he knows how to design a game.
Yeah, look, and I had a heap of fun with this game. Now, it's interesting because we were playing a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Print and play review.
A print and play review version where they had still yet to make some final changes. We were using our own poker chips, which I found I really enjoyed the poker chips. And when the game came out with the cardboard money, I really missed the poker chips. But a great game. Look, it's basically, what's that television show where they auction hunters, they bid on storage containers and they go in and find in what stuff. It's basically that set in a fantasy setting.
Yeah, exactly. But it is such a laugh because so much of the information is secret, so much of the information is open. The fact that the auction master role goes around the table is great. And just the simple thing of you're only going to get money when you're the auction master.
Yeah.
If you can convince the other people to bid in the auction that you've got, but you also might want to win it yourself. So you've got to do this balancing act of, do I want to put a bid in that is high enough to dissuade the other people from bidding unless they really, really, really want it, in which case I'm going to get a lot of money, or do I want to start low and just hope that there's a massive bid?
And it's quite Castles of Mad King Ludwig in that way where you've got limited opportunity to get money. You've got to really make the most of that. But then if you want to get the thing that comes up on your turn, then it really throws a spanner in the works.
Exactly.
But you're missing the biggest positive of the whole thing, is that it has one of those boxes with a little magnetic snappy case things. Oh, when I first got it and opened it, I just did that My wife came into the room and said, have you read the rules for the game we're playing when the guys get here in 10 minutes? And I was just sitting there, just snapping the case back and forth. The first designer that brings out a large box game that uses one of them, I don't care what it is, I'm just throwing money at
Well, it's
place.
Probably going to be a large box edition of Exploding Kittens, unfortunately, because that has the same thing. And I think that was the only thing that Mark enjoyed out of that game is the fact that the box opened and went
meow.
Actually, I might get that copy off you and just sit there in my home watching TV, just flicking it back and forth.
Excellent. Mark, do you want to do another one or should we go to Leon?
Well, we haven't heard you guys. Number five.
Leon.
Right. My game came out in 2014, but wait, in its native land, which I can't seem to find at the moment. It's somewhere in the Europes.
Yep.
But it was a large distribution earlier this year by Cryptozoic, and that is Spyfall.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
So the deduction game for 1 to 8 players, I think it is, where one person, you hand out a card to each person face down. One person is the spy. Everyone else simply knows their location and their job at this location.
Yep.
So the aim of the spy is to figure out what location we're at, because they have no idea. All they know is they're the spy. And it's the job of everybody else to try and weed out the spy, but at the same time not give away their location. So it depends on the questions that you ask and the mannerisms of all different people. And there is one thing I would recommend to anybody that has this game. In the middle of the book, there's a big printout of all the locations in the game. I actually got that copied 8 different times so everyone at the table could have it. Because I noticed many times when I was playing it, people would give themselves away by just staring at the rule book, which is in the middle of the table, trying to see them. And you can clearly tell they were the spy because everyone else was kind of flicking their hair and not paying attention.
Yep.
So it was really, really obvious. That's my only real flaw in the game. Other than that, it's just a barrel of laughs when you get the right crew together.
Yeah, fantastic. I haven't had the opportunity to play it yet, but geez, that was hot for a lot of 2015. So I think that's a pretty good choice.
What about you, Garth? Your number 5?
Well, for me, again, I haven't chosen a game that was released in 2015, but I have to go with the games that I've played a lot.
Yes.
And for me, one of the games that I have played, it would be in the top 5 games that I've played in terms of play numbers, is just Sushi Go. I have played this game probably every week since I got it in March or April. So this is currently the one game that my kids will come to again and again and again and just want to play and play and play. Now, for me, it is such a great introduction to our hobby because it introduces a hell of a lot of the mechanics that games all have. They have set collection, they have interaction, they have the mechanic of keeping an eye out on what your neighbours do. The art is beautiful in that stylistic children way that is just so involving for the kids.
Yeah.
They love the fact that it makes sense. I love the fact that I can play with a 5 and an 8-year-old and the buggers beat me and it is legitimately I'm not giving the game away. Phil has done a fantastic job with this game and I salute Game Right for getting it out there. It was hard to come by for a long, long time. Again, at this time of year, there have been a lot of plaudits, and I think it won one of the Australian Games of the Year through some critics, which is great. I can't fault this. I jumped onto the Board Game Geek store today, and there's a little soy sauce promotion deck that I'm going to get, and I'm really happy with that choice.
There's one thing I have to say about that game that I know a lot of people listening, some people might be Euro gamers or play everything or whatever your style is. Legitimately, I think anyone who's listening to this show who clearly has an interest in board or card games needs to have this game.
Agreed.
Because you sooner or later will have people come around your house and they will have children or they don't play games, and it's just perfect.
It basically does almost everything that Seven Wonders does in half an hour or less. So if you want a game where you can easily just sit down with a whole bunch of non-gamers and show them what we do without cracking open Twilight Struggle, this is the game to do it.
Absolutely. And it is a great lead-in to something like Seven Wonders as well.
Oh, it's perfect.
All right, let's get down to number 4. Okay, that never gets old.
Never.
Leon, your number 4.
My number 4 is kind of a cheat, and this is the last one I promise. It did come out this year, but it is kind of just a bit more of something I love, and it's Summoner Wars Alliances.
Oh, okay, yep.
So it's the second master set to Summoner Wars, which I've mentioned on the show before, that for my money, outside of a Memoir 44 and Twilight Struggle, is the best two-player game out there by a mile. I think Summoner Wars, for me, I think is maybe even better than those two, just because of the simplicity of it. And Alliances adds 8 more factions to already the however many more that you could have, whether you bought the box set or some of the other smaller ones. And it also adds a nice felt mat to it as well.
La-di-da!
Because my cardboard one was starting to fall apart. So that's very nice. And it comes in a probably the best looking box, I think, of the year. It's a massive box that you can fit everything that's ever been released from Summoner Wars in it. And the art on the cover is just absolutely amazing. And mine happened to be signed by Mr. Designer.
Well, there we go.
And I happened to get it a little bit before anybody else in Australia. But, you know.
That's Plaid Hat, isn't it? Is that Colby Dowsh?
Yep, that's the man. So I've said it before, and I will keep saying it until I'm red in the face. Summoner Wars, everyone needs to at least give it a crack. It fills a lot of itches for some of the bigger things in our hobby, like your Magic or Warhammer, without the billions of dollars or billions of hours.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I would love to play this game because, again, that just sounds so up my alley.
No, I'm going to jump in with my number 4. You mentioned it briefly, Garth, and I'm guessing that means you don't have it on your list, is The Gallerist.
Oh, okay, no.
So, look, I almost wasn't going to put it on, because I have only played it the once, but, and of course it's Vital Lacerda.
Yep.
Eagle Griffin Games. Now, I was sure that you mentioned it, Garth, but maybe you didn't, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I think you are.
Look, I only played it the once.
Yep.
I was so impressed with this game. As a heavy heavy Euro game, Vital Lacerda obviously having done
Kanban,
CO2, those full-on Vignos. Games, this is fantastic. I loved it.
Yep.
It's not a game I want to pull out every week or even every month and play, but it's just got so much depth, so much involvement, interaction. I just was blown away by it, and I never expected it.
Yeah, well, I didn't mention it, but I was going to, so it's certainly in my top five as well. Who would have thought that curating an art gallery is something that gamers like us would sit around and get really excited and passionate about? But this game does it. It looks fantastic on the table. It is mammoth. You need a big table to get all this stuff out. Vital has done an amazing job with not only the game, but also the setup, the explanation, everything that goes around that, because a lot of the time the biggest obstacle to these heavy Euros is where do you start and how do you make the first hour to an hour and a half, which is basically how to do this game, enjoyable. So, look, I do enjoy the fact that I made the effort to go and get some of the information from Board Game Geek that Vital wrote and say, this is how you explain this game and make it interesting. But the joy of it was, even though we played this game from about 9:30 at night till 2 o'clock in the morning, was anyone not engaged. No one was bored.
Didn't drag
everyone at all. Was planning their strategy. It had some really simple kick out mechanics, which meant that even though the turn order was always going around clockwise, you were almost always going to get a turn out of sequence to be able to be involved.
Yeah.
It does a lot of things really, really well. So no, it's definitely in my top five. So you've sort of let me go into my next one, I guess, because I'll talk about another one that's in my top five that's not from this year. It's a classic that's been around.
Is this your number four?
Well,
have you actually ranked yours? You've just got a random clustering of five games.
I've tried to go for five games that are completely different. Rather than the top five, fives that have different mechanics, different feels. Games that, if I'm feeling a certain way, I'll get out all the time.
That's funny, because I look at my top five.
Yeah.
They are all completely different.
Which is great. Yeah. So let's just get this one out of the way, because it'll be on my list for almost ever, and it's Cosmic Encounter. I know.
Pardon? Hang on.
Yeah, come on. This game is brilliant.
Yes.
Okay.
It came out in
2008.
It came out in 1977.
But we're not talking about the newest games for me. I'm talking about my top five. And this game is not broke, so it does not need fixing. It has fantastic expansions that add to the craziness. There is very few games that, again, you can sit down and introduce to a whole bunch of non-gamers and say, this is what our hobby is about. You're going to try and take control of planets, and you're going to negotiate for it. You're going to have battles. You're going to get screwed over. Everyone's going to laugh. We're going to gang up on this person. I'm going to have tears. You're going to have laughter. And it plays really quite quickly. I love it.
Look, what this hobby about is not games that are 25 years old, Garth.
Bollocks.
It's about friends.
We're going to get yelled at for that. Bum, 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 bum.
Friends, la, 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 la. Oh, isn't that sweet? That was Flight of the Conchords with Friends. My favourite one of these is still Business Time.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Oh, yeah. You are with the Dice Men
Cometh. Business Time.
On Edge Radio 99.3, we are at the pointy end of our games of the year.
The business end, in fact.
Oh, yeah. You going to put your business socks on?
I've got them on, baby, because it's Wednesday. It's Thursday
it's
night.
Thursday.
look, let's get straight into it. We've got three each to go.
Yep.
Firstly, just in case we said at the start of the show, we're going to talk about our latest episode of Pandemic Legacy. That's just gone right out the window.
Exactly. You guys just talk too much about games. Are you a little bit addicted?
Tiny bit.
It's okay, but we can talk about that next week.
Yes.
Because, spoiler alert, we didn't win the last game.
No.
So We'll have two games to talk about next time.
Yeah.
Number three for me, you mentioned briefly, Garth, this is the game that you did.
Oh, I did really mention
that you did talk about. Elysium by Aussie boy Matt Dunstan, now living in the UK, of course, and Brett Gilbert from Asmodee. I played this at BorderCon, played it twice on the first night. Loved it. Yep. Loved it, loved it, loved it. It helped that I won both games really easily for some reason, but... I don't know.
Was that because you were playing a solo version?
No.
No.
It just did it for me. The mechanics, the card play, the art, the setup, the little pillars. It was just a beautiful game, well executed. I was so mad it didn't win the Kenner Spiel.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, and look, I certainly put it on my honourable mentions. And the thing that stopped me putting it on there is purely the fact that I played it once.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I didn't have the opportunity to play it as many times as you did at BorderCon. I think you could go there and play this game 15, 20 times and just love it every single time because you've, again, got a massive combination of cards.
Yeah, lots of replayability.
The mechanics all look really, really good. Again, I think Matt's done a fantastic job in just making it work. You know, even that first time that myself and Trent played it for the only time, it just made sense, and that's something that when you do play a lot of games, you want to be able to get rid of all the fluff and get straight into the meat of it. So had a great time with that.
I've played it nuns.
Yeah?
but I really do want
And it's
to.
Not on your top five.
No.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, Leon, do you want to go next and talk to us about the next one?
My number three is a game that I don't think I've ever mentioned to you boys before. I've never mentioned on this show.
Okay.
And it's a game I don't own.
Wow.
Is there such a thing?
There is. It is from Fantasy Flight.
Yep.
Forbidden Stars.
Okie dokie. I know Warhammer of this game.
Warhammer 40K. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kind of a light 4X style game.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could play as the Marines or the Chaos or the Orcs and Goblins or the Elder.
Yep.
And you're vying for conquest on various different planets in a big open galaxy. And it's really, really good. Each faction obviously plays completely different than the other. And I don't actually have a 4X style game in my collection, so I reckon I'll probably have to pick this up soon anyway.
Yeah.
I could speak about this much longer, and I might even do like a longer review about it later. But yep. You know, it's a really, really good game that I think everyone should check out. And hopefully... probably getting some expansions into it, seeing as it's Fantasy Flight. Although yeah. I have not heard anything.
And it's also Warhammer.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, it's not just the brand name. It's a really good game. Well, the best example I can give, one of my favourite gaming experiences from the year, played this with a couple of guys. There was three of us. It took us about 4 hours, and the game came down between all three of us to literally like the last card flip.
Wow.
So the game wasn't decided 2 hours early when one of us was crushing the other one.
Yep.
It was neck and neck between all of us for four straight hours, and it came down to one card at the end. And I was spewing because I was winning the whole game. But I was winning the whole game until then. That was my number three.
Oh, fantastic. Now, look, Garth, you got out of whack, haven't you?
Well, you got out of whack because you said that I'd talked about the Gallerist when I hadn't. So you have thrown me out.
But you didn't put numbers on your countdown, Garth.
Well, I words good, not numbers good.
Right, okay.
Hey, yeah. Trademark.
Okay, so we're down to our second most popular game.
Exactly right.
And who wants to go first? Garth?
All right, well, I think I'm pretty fairly confident that at least for some of us, we're going to be talking about some similar games for the next couple of minutes.
Yep.
We don't have many. So let's just throw into it. I am going to say that Pandemic Legacy is my number two game, which I know is a bit of a... I don't know. Is it number one? Is it number two? This game is skyrocketing up the Board Game Geek charts. It is number two, fast approaching number one. So Twilight Struggle has a target on its back at the moment.
Although, have you seen the controversy of a whole bunch of people who basically, for no other reason apart from they don't want it to get to number one... They haven't played it, and they're going on and rating it one to stop it from getting to number one.
Oh, that old video game thing of, this is the worst game ever.
Exactly. Yeah. So, look, I mean, when you look at voter numbers, you know, Twilight Struggle has it, you know, far and away. Yeah. Puerto Rico is the number one in terms of voters, in terms of the number of people who voted. But let's talk about Pandemic Legacy. We talk about it every week, seemingly, here, but the fact that it is for me, the first Legacy game that I've played... the fact that it brings so much excitement, so much tension, so much enjoyment as a collective experience, I just think it is brilliant. My concern is what's going to happen this time next year, because it could die, you know, in that everyone who's wanted to play it has played it, and what's going to happen with it.
Yeah, the reason that it didn't make my list, even though it's a good game, is that I think the experience and the fun we've been having playing it, I enjoy that a lot more than the actual game itself. Even though I don't mind Pandemic, I'm not a massive fan, but yeah, the experience of it is second to none.
Yep.
Yeah, and look, I put it in my top two.
Yep.
And it's not my number two.
Well, there you go.
So that's what I think of it. A game has never given me so much anticipation, so much enjoyment, so much excitement.
Anxiety.
You know, think about it. I mean, we're heading to the pub after this to play it again.
Yep.
And I can't wait.
Exactly right. All right. Leon, do you have a number two? Or
My number two was Blood Rage.
It was Blood Rage.
I'm literally not going to speak about it again because I've done it every week. It's really good. Get it. If you've got a mate that makes lots of money, get him to get it for you.
Yes. Okay, cool. Should we do number ones? At least talk about the games that are number one instead?
Yeah, let's.
All right. I think it's fair that go first.
Pandemic Legacy is my number one for all the reasons we just said.
Exactly right. Leon.
My number one is a little game by the name of Codenames.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Codenames is my number one. We spoke about it earlier and said all the positive things. The one thing that I didn't mention, because I wanted to save it to now, is the sense of accomplishment in that game is amazing for how small it is. Every time you get anything right, it's a fist pumping. That was amazing.
Yep.
For something so small, and it's just... When I looked at it on online, didn't do anything for me. It just blew me away.
Exactly right. And it's there on my list as well in the same position. If I have to put a number one next to a game, it's going to be this one. I would much rather not, because all of the games we're talking about are fantastic in their own right. And I've deliberately tried to choose different mechanics. But you hit the nail on the head there, Leon. It's just... this brings such a punch in a tiny little box. I mean, Vlada does all these kind of games. So you just go, what can't this guy do? But the fact that all you're doing is trying to put a couple of cards and find one common word sounds so simple, but the enjoyment, the tension, the absolute, you know, you just go into tears in laughter when someone tries to create a combination using some random word. But also the fact that you just sit down and you think and you think and you think and you go, what can I do to make this work? It's so hard. And the fact that you will play this game straight away. There's no option. You will go shuffle the cards again and go again.
And Garth, by the way, earlier you mentioned squirrel and keyboard.
Yeah.
It's a stretch compared to what else could be on the table, but I'm saying maybe Apple.
Okay. Because
keyboard, Apple computer, and I'm sure I've seen a squirrel in Apple as well. I reckon it's a shot. I'm gritting my teeth, but I reckon I've done it.
Well, look, it was in my top two.
Yep.
And it wasn't my number one. Okay. So, you know, look, it's a great game. Was very close to being my number one. And just as I said, the excitement and anticipation, for me, a Pandemic Legacy beat it out.
Yep.
I'm loving it. I can't wait to play it again. I can't wait to play it with new people. Vlada is a freaking genius.
Exactly.
To have something like Through the Ages, something like Space Alert, something like this, all the other games he's done, such a plethora of different things. And every one of them is amazing.
Exactly. And I'm pretty confident that 2015 has been a pretty damn sexy year for board gaming. There are a lot of games out there that will stand the test of time, I'm sure.
Between this year and last year, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, we've just got one quick minute.
Mm-hmm.
We must make mention of our 12 Games of Christmas competition. You would have seen it posted on our Facebook page. So all we want you to post a photo, a video, an audio clip.
Something. Yeah, we're not
on
fussy.
Our Facebook page. That'll get you an entry. If you share our post about the competition, even though we're not allowed to say it on Facebook, but if you share it, we'll give you another entry.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 12 games to give away.
And I got another one over the course of the last week, which we have to talk about next week because we ran out of time. Yes. Doshboard Golf. They have been kind enough to give us a copy of that game. So that's going to be in the prize pool.
Yeah, so feel free to get anybody you know to like our page and to share it as well, or to put up their own entry. Even if you do that with everybody you know, when you win all the games, it's fine by us.
Exactly right.
We will be back next week on Christmas Eve to talk about Pandemic Legacy, amongst other things, and the competition. So you have a great week in gaming, and we'll talk to you then.
Yes, let's go.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.